Great, half of the people are already here. I decided it's fair to assume that everybody remembers all the details from all the other talks. So I want to put some of the formulas back on the blackboard. So there was a formula by Dijkgraaf, Moore, Verlinde and Verlinde, which we saw in Tamanoy's talk. How does it look like? It expresses the Oberfold elliptic genus. Of the symmetric powers of the complex, almost complex manifold. And some product formula, so it's n greater or equal to 0. And here we have m greater or equal to 1, n greater or equal to 0, and l an integer, 1. Over 1 minus t to the m, q to the n, y to the l, to the c of m, n, comma l, where t is a form of variable. It was called p before. But in my context, p is going to be a prime, so I renamed it into t. So this elliptic genus of my manifold M is a two-variable elliptic genus. And this genus and its Oberfold versions were defined and discussed in Vasily Gobunov's talk. So this product formula, again, the striking thing about it is that the left-hand side describes these Oberfold genera of the symmetric powers of my manifold, whereas the right-hand side, apart from these formal variables, it only involves the coefficients C and L, which were the coefficients from the elliptic genus of just M itself, no symmetric powers on the right-hand side. And also from Tamanoy's talk, we know that the right-hand side can be written as in this shape, so I call it V sub n of P of m P to the n. So these are some sort of Hecker operators acting on Jacobi form. Acting on two expansions of Jacobi forms, and well, this thing is not always a Jacobi form. It's Jacobi form is if M is an SU manifold, but for such expressions, these are still defined. So they were before they were called, I believe, P of N, and I believe that this calculation, I mean, the place where I saw it is in some papers by Borchert, where he first the product formula for the J function. So definitely these kind of expressions from the right-hand side, they are older than just this paper. They come from the moonshine literature. And so these sort of expressions is what people call a Borchardt's lift. Of the Jacobi form, or if it is a Jacobi form, of the Jacobi form, DL of M. Okay. This is one sort of formula discussed already in this conference. Many people are interested in it for different reasons. I want to discuss the product formulas in more general context, so I'll give you a much more easy example. So, this was also already on the blackboard in Tamanoy's talk. So, what I will call topological thought genus of an orbifold was there, I think, the topological Euler characteristic. So what does this look like? The left-hand side sort of has exactly the same shape. So we look now at the thought genus, topological thought genus, of these symmetric powers. And the right hand side looks simpler. It's not really a product anymore. Looks like this. So our goal is to come up with a systematic understanding of such formulas. From the point of view of stable homotopy theory, what I call a homotopy theoretic refinement, and well, this is a K-theory notion, sort of an elliptic cohomology notion. So, could ask about higher chromatic versions of this, and yes, they exist. So, normally if mathematicians look at a physics paper, what do we see as our jobs? It's a model building process often. You try to look at the physics and to construct a piece of mathematics that best captures the story in physics, and you hope that by doing that you come up with some interesting mathematics and maybe are able to say more about the physics phenomena. So this project has a slightly different flavor. So we're not going to construct anything. It's rather that we're observing that the objects and the formulas that these string theorists come up with, well, first we observe that they have a strong resemblance of something that already exists in its own right and a priori has nothing to do with string theory. I'm speaking about the K2 local category here. But it's more than just an observation. It turns out that once you look at it in the slide, what we see, the formulas that we see are sort of just on the surface what we see from a deeper homotopy theoretic phenomenon. And this sort of deeper understanding is, it's at least powerful enough to be able to use homotopy theoretic methods to really prove some stuff. And to come up with what I think are rather conceptual proofs for some things that often involve sort of big formulas. So maybe I'll just say the second goal is sort of the K2 local category and Kn local categories. So there, if you want to speak about orbital genera, basically what I'm trying to say, the Kn local categories are the place to be. Right? Let's leave it at that. Okay, so now let's try to look at these formulas, which I have, sort of, by purpose, not really given you the definition of these things anymore, because I'm looking at these things sort of without really knowing what they are, just with the eyes of a homotopy theorist, trying to see why do I actually have the idea that I could say anything about such things. So, the left-hand side, it involves an object that we should know as a homotopy theorist. It involves the total power operation. In complex cobordism, or more precisely, when you have a point. Just some coefficients. Okay. What about the right-hand side? First of all, it only depends on the elliptic genus of M or the plot genus of M. Okay, this has been said already, so it's a function of C, if you want, and it takes sums into products. Well, so do total power operations. So one could see maybe already that there's something going on. So the third thing, of course, what is a genus? A genus in our context is always a map of spectra, or we always want it to be. A map of spectra. So in the K-theory case, in the plot genus case, we have the map into K-theory, which is the Konner-Floyd map. And maybe in the elliptic case, we definitely want a picture where we map into some sort of elliptic cohomology theory. And of course, it's again a map of spectra, but if you want the genus, just apply to manifolds. So it's tied to, or restricted to, mu star of a point to the coefficient. There's one more so very curious thing about the right-hand side. If you look at this expression, this would look sort of like something we don't often see in homotopy theory. But this looks already much closer. And indeed, the right-hand side looks very similar here. To the inverse of Charles's logarithm formula. So, in particular, these things, so Hecker operators is also something that we have at hand in elliptic cohomology, in the context of elliptic cohomology. So, we heard about this morning, there are cohomology operations. Okay. And one more thing that I already mentioned, I just want to write it down here. So the topological thought genus is a chromatic level 1 phenomenon. And the elliptic genus, well, it's sort of called elliptic, so we should hope that it's called that it's sort of lived at chromatic level 2. Okay? So this is what a homotopy theorist sees when looking at these phenomena. So of course now there's the question. Does the formula, the Dycroft-Moore-Velinda-Velinda formula here, maybe simply reflect the fact that some map of spectra, this map of spectra, is an H-infinity map, preserves power operation, right? And, well, let me give you a vague answer and a bit more precise answer in a second. So the answer is yes, sort of. But more precisely, I should say what we're doing here. So the setup is going to be, we pick an elliptic cohomology theory. There's many elliptic cohomology theories that we could pick here, try our luck with. And we pick this to be the second Lava E theory. And so then there's indeed a theorem that for any H-infinity map, from MU, or it could be some other atom spectrum actually, to E2, let's say EN here already, so I'll give you the statement with the higher chromatic versions already. Has a product formula, or a formula. There's no product in there anymore. The left-hand side as it should be. Operfold version of C applied to the symmetric powers and some dummy variable. And on the right hand side, you have this expression. Now, with the Hecker operators being the Hecker operators in Morava E theory. So, I guess they're denoted like this. Okay, so what is going on here? We have a formula that looks, of course, exactly like that, apart from the fact that we have a p-typical version here. And, of course, working with E2 forces us to have these p-typical versions in here. So let me just say that this is the Hecker operator in Morava E theory. That was in Charles' talk. Now, we could ask, okay, why do we have to work with E2? I mean, we have the formula here already, that's what we're trying to imitate. Why do we bother working with E2? Well, the situation is really that if we wanted to reproduce exactly such a formula, then we would have to know what equivariant elliptic cohomology is. And since Jacob hasn't given his talk yet, we don't. So we have to help ourselves and work Borel equivariantly. So first of all, this is an elliptic spectrum. And secondly, well, it's Borel equivariant versions. So Borel equivariant means E2 of EG crossover G. Now we can plug in the G space here. Are well understood. Moreover, it's an H infinity ring spectrum. And the H infinity structure is also very well understood, and Matthew Endo in his thesis has classified, or not in this thesis, in different equations, has classified what H-infinity maps into the spectrum there are. Right? So we have several reasons to look at this. Also, we have heard already that there's these Hecke operators. And to be honest, there are actually more reasons. Which I'll explain later. So of course here I've given you a beautiful formula without defining all the objects in there. I mean, I'm blaming the Hecke operators on somebody else, but I haven't said anything about the definition of the orbifold genus in this context. So I'll do this in a second. I just want to point out what I mean by homotopy theoretic refinement. So this is already the higher chromatic you can sort of check because you put n instead of 2. This is really not difficult. Want to know how to define this. But so what does homotopy theoretic refinement mean? Well, really this theorem here, it comes from an inequality. So from the quality of cohomology operations. So this is a sort of total symmetric power in rather E theory, which also needs to be defined, but it's very analog to the total symmetric power in K theory. So really we have an equality of cohomology operations, and if our space is a point, then we recover such a product formula. Okay. So now what I have to do is to define these orthofold genera, and as a model I will tell you how to define the topological pod genus. This is actually something that's old. You can find it already in the Atiyah Siegel index paper. Okay, I shouldn't say it's old, but it's longer around than these other things. So how do you define these things? Let's say I have a almost complex manifold acted upon by some finite group G. G is always finite nor convex. Then there are equivariant versions of these kind of Lie maps. So I can take the equivariant pod genus of M, let some push forward an equivariant K theory. So this thing is going to live in KG of a point, which we know is the representation ring, complex representation ring of G. So how is the topological pod genus of the orthofold defined? I just take the traces of various group elements evaluated at this thing. So, well, that's the definition. And Atiyah and Siegel in their index paper actually show the following formula for this object. So any of these summons trace over one of these elements is the integral over the fixed point set of the top class of the fixed point manifold multiplied with this product minus C times E to the XI of... Okay. So what are these? These are the churn roots of the eigenbundles of the action of a group element on the normal bundle of the six-point manifold in M. So those people who have seen the definitions of these orthofold genera from the string theory sort of literature, also from the algebraic geometry literature, are more familiar with expressions like this. And but so that's what I will tell you the generalization of, which is actually due to Matthew Andrew and Chris French, is this part. Yeah, this part. So you want to generalize left hand side. So the definition is due to Matt Andrew and Chris French. So if I have a genus from mu into, let's think about E2, but I think if you put En, that's fine. Here, so what do we want to do? Well, we have already said that we replace equivariant K-theory by Borel equivariant. So Borel equivariant Morava E-theory. So now we have these evaluation maps, taking trace over just a group element in kg of a point, right? So on this side, this corresponds to E of bg. So here we're going to the complex numbers by some trace over some group element. And here we have an analog of that. That's the Hopkins-Kuhn-Ravenel evaluation map. So we have a map going to the doesn't go to the coefficients in this case, goes to some ring called D. So it doesn't matter for us what D is, but what matters for us is what type of thing alpha is. So I'm afraid nobody can read the right down there. I'm gonna write it up there. So let's put an N here. This is Hopkins-Kuhn Ravenel evaluation map, character evaluation map. And rather than evaluating at group elements, we evaluate at n tuples. Of commuting elements of p power order. Okay, great. So this is another great reason why we should work with E2 or En. So here we had already a list of reasons, but really, if you look at these formulas, which maybe turned up in Vasily's talk, which for these overfold elliptic genus, you always have these pairs of commuting elements. And so, I mean, you know already that these pairs of commuting elements also turn up in our world, namely for E2. And then it's very natural to go up for the higher chromatic things and take n tuples of commuting elements. And even more keenly here, now we see that if you want to put formulas into the same picture by like varying n, then our elliptic genus, orbifold elliptic genus, these notions are like a chromatic level 2 notion. And the correct chromatic level 1 analog is the topological Todd genus, which also has such a thing as orbifold Todd genus. Right? But that's sort of a chromatic level 2 notion already because it involves these pairs of commuting elements. So it's like viewing K-theory as an elliptic spectrum, if you want. Okay, so we have our Hopkins-Kuhn-Ravenel character theory, and then we just simply define the definition following N-known fringe. So if you have P going from mu to En, then we define the orbifold genus associated to phi of So for now, I could just kind of find it off an equivariant, almost complex manifold. I haven't proved yet that it's independent of the representation of the overflow. So, but this you can define as 1 over G, sum over all such alpha, evaluation at alpha of Cg of M, where this is a Borelic variant, version of P. So there's one small but substantial difference to the definitions. I've put in a 1 over G for N non-essential. I left it out. And now I have to say something here. I have to say something about integrality. And this expression, you can easily see that it's actually in the coefficients of the N. But here it looks a bit like I have to invert the order of the group in order for this expression to make sense. So at this point, I am ready to formulate the rest of the results about these things. The first result is an integrality statement. So, with this definition, you want to know that this thing is actually in the coefficients of some n here of the Morava E theory rather than here. And the second is our overflow genus is a well-defined notion of orbifolds, meaning that if I have some manifold M acted upon by a finite group G and some different manifold N acted upon by a finite group H, such that the quotients agree as orbifolds. It's a bit more than just agreeing as quotient spaces. Then we know that the orbifold genus is also the same of these two things. So this is the These are the two things that I want to speak about for the rest of my time. Okay, what about the integrality? Well, in K-theory, how do we know that this expression, so this whole thing, is an integer? How do we know this? Well, you go from here. So what is this map? 1 over G, sum over all group elements, evaluation at this group element. Well, that's the same as taking the inner product with the trivial representation. through the G representation, so counting how many times the trivial representation occurs in it. So surely that's integral. Now, we also have an inner product in these ENs. So let me explain to you how this works. So there's a paper by Niels Strickland where he does the following. He looks at BG plus and defines a multiplication on it in the stable homotopy category, I guess, but eventually we're going to look KN locally. And he also has this map from here to the sphere augmentation map. So this is the same as B of the trivial group plus, right? And this map is just B of the unique map from G to the trivial group plus. Okay, so what does Neil show? Pardon? No, I mean, you can define them before you look at the transfer map along the diagonal. Yeah, and this thing is just B of PG. So these two maps already exist. And also the co-multiplication already exists, but the map from S0 to BG plus you have to look at. Hmm? So, okay, let's look at that. And my convention with localizing is that I just say that we view all these things as things in the KN local category. I'm not going to write any L's on the blackboard, right? So in the KN local category, we take we write B for the composite here, and now we look at the adjoint going from BG plus to its KN local spanulated dual. And so Niels' theorem is that this is an isomorphism. Okay? So because of that, we now get the map in the other direction. Map, okay, I guess this augmentation map is normally called epsilon. Fine. And so well, this was just the transfer of delta, and he proved that this is actually B delta. So delta is the diagonal of G. So these are maps. So this map only exists in the KN local category. But this map, this is our map. Right, this is inner multiplication with 1. So you get an inner product from E of BG, tensor E of BG, to E naught, and the inner product is 1. Is just eta star from E of BG to E naught, E naught of BG to E naught. And, well, once you know what you're going for, then it's not so difficult to show that if you have two Hopkinson-Ravenel characters, then the formula for the inner product, Strickland inner product, is exactly this. Where alpha runs over all n tuples of commuting elements of p-power order. Hmm? Okay, so now that you know this, we have identified this map 1 over G, so we're this part is inner product with 1, or pullback along eta. And I have to really say that I want to thank Charles Resk for pointing out to me that this actually implies integrality just the same way as the K-theory statement. Okay, great. A few more minutes. So I can tell you now I want to come to the last statement that I made there, that is the well-defined notion of orbital. Okay, so we should go back a little bit to remember how this, what genera are, what equivariant genera, what Borel equivariant genus. So, if I want to compute the genus of a manifold, then the equivariant genus of M, Borel equivariant genus, this is the push forward of 1. Where 1 is in E naught of EG naught of M. So I start here with E Borel equivariant E theory of M. I go with the Thom isomorphism. Now I want more space for this picture. Here my EG of M, which is E of the Borel construction of M, and I go here with a Thom isomorphism to EG of M to the minus its tangent bundle, and this is E to the minus D. So this is the G equivariant some spectrum of the stable normal bundles. And what Tomaismorphs will see my map P from MU to E specifies a Tomaismorphism that I can use here. Okay, so this map is independent because the Borel construction of Oberfold is independent of its representation, and so is its tangent bundle. This map is independent of the representation of the Oberfold. So now, how do we go further here? What is this map? How do we get here? That was the Pantriagin-Tom collapse. And then from here, this is G equivariant. So here I should really say that this is E minus D of VG, VG plus. You know? And here, of course, we went further with eta star. Now, what is the Pontryagin-Thumb collapse? So this is G equivariant. Well, that's some of the Spanier-Whitehead dual G equivariantly of, so this is DG of this map pi, where pi was the unique map from M to a point, but it's M acted upon by G to point acted upon by G. Okay. What was eta again? I still have eta up there, so when I wrote I get eta, that's because I have this isomorphism, right? So what you do is you just take the isomorphism to the Spanier-Whitehead dual, and eta was, we got as the dual of epsilon. So it's the dual of the Borel construction of this map, PG. And so here I have the KN local dual composed of the Borel construction of PG. So PG was the map which mapped G to the trivial group in a unique way. So here, point acts upon by the trivial group. So the problem with the definition of Oberfold genus, basically, why don't you see immediately that it's independent of the representation of the Oberfold, is that you only sort of look at this map, and then you have this sort of slightly random looking map, 1 over G, blah, blah, blah. Why would we write down such an expression, 1 over G, sum of rho alpha, and so on? Well, now this gives us a perfect reason why we would write down this expression, because it's induced in the KN local category by this dual map, which is exactly what you need to compose here. But there's one law, a slight problem here, which is that here I have the KN local dual composed with a Borel construction, and here I take an equivariant dual and I compose it with a Borel construction. So one has to prove again that that's actually a fine thing to do KN locally. And so if G is finite and X is a finite G CW complex, then we have a functor isomorphism functor where the variable is X. And default, of course, only in the KN local category. And I should say that this is also a consequence of Strickland's work. So basically, because this isomorphism he constructs also for finite group points, so I can start with Gmod H. So it gives me the zero cells. So yeah, maybe the only thing that I want to just write down, I said it already, is that this is a well-defined net of orbifolds. So that once I know that I can switch these two back, then I know I can apply the Borel construction to that. The Borel construction of a map of orbifolds is well defined. And then, of course, I have no orbifolds anymore. I'm somewhere in the Ken local category in the residual. Okay, that's what I wanted to say.